Well, good morning. You know, my wife, Jen, and I were fortunate enough to spend the bulk of our March in South Carolina this year. The beach, the water, and the warmer temperatures made for a very attractive alternative to Rochester. I'm not going to go any more on that because I want you guys to still like me. But towards the end of our time, I was ready to come home. Jen, a little bit less so. I was looking forward to getting back to my routine, back to the basics, back to the meat and potatoes of life, so to speak. So I had that mindset of getting back to the basics when I started to think about this message. What are the basics for us, whether we believe in Jesus or are just starting to wonder about him? So I started to think about the verse that's likely said at just about every wedding, 1 Corinthians 13:13. And these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. You know, usually love gets the focus of that verse when it's discussed, and rightfully so. But I'd like to focus on the other ones, and specifically on faith today. You know, faith is very prevalent in our vocabulary. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the most sermoned topic ever. I'm not even sure sermoned is a word. But faith is so widely used as a word and a concept within Christianity and outside that it's likely lost a bit of its meaning. So today I'd like to bring some focus to this important concept. But of course, to start with a story. My parents moved to the Rochester area when I was a year and a half old, and they bought a small two-story home in Fairport, not far away from the canal. When I was 8, maybe 9 years old, on a Saturday after breakfast, my dad told my younger sister and I that we were going to work on fire safety that day, and we were going to have a fire drill in the rare case that we had a fire in our home. My dad, like me, was an engineer, and of course he had the various scenarios all mapped out, which as an adult I really appreciate. But anyways, on that day we were going to practice the situation where the fire was in the stairs and both my sister and I were both upstairs, like in the middle of the night and we were sleeping. In this case, my sister was to come to my bedroom and I was to open the window, and we were both to go out onto the garage roof that was right outside my bedroom window. I'm thinking, so far so good. The next part of the drill was getting off the garage roof and onto the ground and away from the house. The problem, of course, is the garage roof, even at its lowest point, was about 9 feet off the ground. My dad told us that either he or one of our neighbors or a fireman would be there with outstretched arms, and we were to jump, and that person would catch us. I was intrigued. My younger sister, not so much. Because my dad wanted us to be comfortable with jumping from such a height, he wanted us to do a practice jump to his outstretched arms that very morning. And he wanted us to make sure my sister went first so I could help as needed. But no matter how much coaxing and reassuring or saying, "I'll catch you, you'll be fine, no problems," my dad said that morning to my six-year-old sister. She sat there on the edge of the garage roof, shaking her head and not budging. My dad's next tactic was to have me jump so that my sister could see me jump and see that it really wasn't that bad. And then maybe she'd be more willing. But while he was introducing this topic, this idea to us, and before he could fully turn towards me, I launched myself off the garage towards him, a la Superman style, expecting a safe catch and landing. Now, this might surprise some of you, but even when I was small, I wasn't really that small. And when my dad caught me, between my size and the height of the jump, the force of the catch caused him to stumble back and we rolled to the ground. It was as if he was trying to catch an extra large bag of concrete thrown at him from a garage roof. Thankfully, we were both fine and laughed about it, and has since become, you know, a part of Mahan family lore. And not surprisingly, there was no more jumps off the garage roof that day. So as I mentioned before my garage Superman story, sermons on faith are widely preached, so that it's possible you've heard somewhere between 10 and 100 sermons on faith, which is a little daunting standing here. But at the same time, I'm convinced we can always learn something new about God, especially on something he considers so precious, so valuable, and so necessary in our relationship with him. So how do we know that he considers the development of faith and trust in him so important? Well, Peter says in 1 Peter 1:7, the proof of your faith being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus. Faith is more precious than gold, which is, and gold has long been considered a precious metal. You may not know, but today gold is valued at about $1,800 an ounce. So that puts my weight in gold, and you can do the math, at about $6.5 million. So gold is super valuable to God, and faith or trust in him even more valuable. But let's back up a little on faith. And this might sound obvious, but what is faith? The writer of Hebrews tells us in chapter 11 that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And I also think it's interesting what Webster's dictionary has to say about faith. Faith is something that is believed with strong conviction, a firm belief in something for which there is no proof. So I think a key aspect of faith highlighted by Hebrews as well as by Mr. Webster is to have or exercise faith. There is an element of the unknown. There is uncertainty. There isn't proof. Whatever we are faced with, whether there is some aspect of the outcome that isn't clear or certain, or perhaps we haven't seen it before. And when there is uncertainty, we have the possibility of various outcomes that we need to choose on how to move forward. You know, in my story earlier, and this might surprise you, but as an 8-year-old, I had never jumped off a garage roof before. In fact, I had never seen anyone jump off a garage roof before. This was way before YouTube and way before America's Funniest Home Videos. But since my sister and I hadn't done it before, and since we knew we were pretty high off the ground, there was some concern of what we were facing. We were faced with uncertainty. Our dad was asking my sister and I to exercise a measure of faith in him to jump off the garage. The uncertainty arose from the possible outcomes of our choice to jump. If I jump, will my dad actually catch me? Or will I hobble away needing stitches or crutches or something similar? The Apostle Paul highlights this aspect of uncertainty of exercising faith in 1 Corinthians 13:12, where he writes, "For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part." So knowing God and exercising faith in him will always have an element of uncertainty, as things are dim, they're a bit fuzzy, and we don't see him like we will someday. Somehow this realization is comforting, and then shouldn't be a surprise to us when we are regularly faced with uncertainty. We are certain that there will be uncertainty. But on the other hand, and if I'm honest, I don't really like uncertainty. After all, when I'm faced with uncertainty, how many times have I said, "God, could you just tell me what you want or how this is going to go?" But would that be faith? When we are faced with uncertainty and choose to trust him, that pleases him. You know, and is good for us no matter what garage roof we are faced with. Okay, so speaking of garages, and because John mentioned jokes in one of his daily emails recently, I've got to throw a couple of these in there. I don't want to disappoint him. All right, so here we go. So I stopped by a local garage, and the mechanic was standing around having coffee. I guess he must have been on a break. Break? Car? Okay. If I give you the A game right out the gate, I'll lose you. Okay, so the second one. I took my car to the garage and filled up the tires with air. It cost $5 more than last week. I guess that's the cost of inflation. Oh, okay, all right. Maybe that's a little too sensitive in today's economic climate, but there you have it. Okay, so seriously, we know so far that the development and exercise of faith is valuable and necessary in God's eyes, and that there is always an element of uncertainty. But what else? You know, if we go back to the writer of Hebrews in chapter 11, he said that without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. You know, there is a ton in this verse alone, and probably full sermons or even books have been written about it. But let's look at a couple of the points. First, we can see from this verse that faith must have something or someone for whom we place our faith. This verse encourages us to believe in God, that he both exists and rewards those that place their faith in him. I mean, it's hard not to like that. Faith must have an object of its trust. So if I'm going through something challenging, big or small, and someone might say to me, you know, just have faith. My first thought based off of this would be something like, faith in what? Faith in who? Faith must have an object of trust. Faith without that object of trust really isn't faith. It's actually wishful thinking. So not surprisingly, I'd never seen my dad catch anyone from jumping off a roof. But I also wasn't completely in the dark about him. I knew my dad. I knew what he was like based on interacting with him every day. I was very fortunate in that I had not known him to try and trick me or be mean to me or hurt me, so I trusted him. All those interactions contributed to my faith in him as a person to catch me, even though I had never seen him catch anyone from a garage, nor had I jumped before. My faith was in my dad to catch me, in part because I knew him. I knew what he was like. I knew I could trust him. I knew my dad. So that begs the question, do you know Jesus? And maybe that sounds a little obvious here in church, but it's important in exercising faith in him. If our knowledge in him as a historical figure, as someone who did amazing stuff 2,000 years ago, but we really don't see him as active and willing and eager to get involved in our lives today, then that will hamper our ability to act in faith towards him. So, do you know Jesus? Do you know what Jesus is like? Do you know he can be trusted and what he says is true? Do you know he is approachable? Do you know he says, come to me when you're weary, when you're worn out, or you just want to chat? Knowing him and experiencing him is an essential aspect and is intertwined in our faith. I love what King David wrote in Psalm 34:8. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. The Lord invites us to get to know him, which then enables our faith and trust in him. Okay, so far we've got the uncertainty part, and we also know we have to place our faith in someone or something to be considered faith. Another aspect of faith or knowing is knowing that the person that we are placing our faith in is capable of making a difference in our situation or concern. So back to my story. You're gonna keep loving these references, but I knew my dad was strong. I knew he was capable. My dad was about 6'4". He weighed about 230 pounds. I knew even then that my dad had been in the military. He had been an avid basketball and avid baseball player, so I knew my dad was strong. I knew he was athletic. So from my perspective, if anyone could catch me from 9 feet off the ground, he was the guy. But let's say for argument's sake, that my mom instead had her arms outstretched towards me and was encouraging me to jump to her. The uncertainty was the same garage. And of course, I knew my mom. I knew she loved me. I knew, and I trusted her. However, my mom had very different capabilities than my dad. My mom was about a foot shorter and maybe 5'4". My mom also weighed all of about 100 pounds, which was probably my weight at the time. And by her own admission, my mom did not have the same strength as my dad. I very likely would not have been as eager to jump based on the prospect of a very different outcome of jumping to her. Over and over again, we see a picture that the Lord is capable, that there's no one like him. Do you know that he is strong and more than capable? The prophet Isaiah says this, "Surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor his ear too dull to hear." Overall, I like to think of these two aspects of faith as the who's and the what's of faith. Who is your faith in, and what are they capable of doing? When I think of the who's and what's of faith, I think of the story in Mark 9. In that story, a father comes to Jesus for help with his son, who is regularly tormented and often in danger due to an evil spirit. This man has seen his son tormented in danger for many years, since childhood. I suspect the father has tried many things, taking him to doctors, talking with various rabbis, maybe undertaking special diets, providing his sons with encouraging words, and who knows what else. But nothing worked. Not even the disciples were able to help the father and his son. Then the father says to Jesus, "If you can, please help my son." Jesus then replies to him, "Everything is possible for the one who believes." And then without missing a beat, in a moment that to me is wonderfully and desperately transparent, the boy's father says, "I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief." You know, the father's reaction to Jesus seems a bit confusing. I mean, does he believe or does he not believe? He seems to be saying, "I believe, but I also don't really believe." So what's really going on here? I would suggest that we have to go to the who's and what's of faith to understand the father's reaction. When he initially says, "I believe," the father is saying, "Jesus, I believe in you and who you say you are." I suspect in his head he's saying, "You know what? This is the guy. This is the guy who's been saying and doing all these amazing things. This is the Son of God." The father gets the check mark, if you will, for the who part of faith. But then the father says, "Help my unbelief." And what he's saying to Jesus is, "I'm hoping you can help me, but at the same time, I'm not really sure you can do anything about my difficult situation." He is struggling with the what's part of faith. In other words, he is saying, "Help me believe that you, Jesus, are capable and are strong enough to help my situation. Help me to believe that you can fix what I haven't been able to solve for years. And honestly, this whole situation seems a bit hopeless." You know, the Father is a little bit like us sometimes, right? How often have we said to ourselves, "Lord, I believe in you." You know, we get the who check mark. "But this situation I'm facing is really pretty tough, and I'm not sure you can or are willing to help." Believing the what's in faith is where the rubber meets the road, and that's not always easy. And the faith in the what's often needs to be a focus area for us. And thankfully, God has provided a mechanism to help with that, his written word. In Romans 10:17, it says, "Faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ." So instead of informing our faith in God by our own personal doubts or what we see, which is, as we heard already, is a bit dim, we can instead read and hear what God can do and thinks of us in his word. Now, perhaps this is obvious, but faith and exercising faith is more than knowing or believing. Faith is directly integrated with action. The writer of James 2 highlights this fact while he is talking about Abraham. He could just as easily be talking about us when he says, "You see that faith and action are working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did." So if we go back to my story, imagine if I told my dad while sitting on the edge of the roof, "You know, Dad, I know you. I know you are strong. I trust you will catch me. And I'm really excited about this opportunity to jump to you. And I have total faith in you, but I'm going to go back inside the house." What would his reaction be? He might say, "You know what? Nice try. If you really trusted me, if you really had faith in me, you would jump. Come on, let's go." So our actions complete or verify our beliefs and therefore complete our faith. So we know faith is uncertain, must have an object of our faith, must have some indication that the person or thing we are placing our faith in can make a difference. The who's and what's of faith. We also now know that faith must have a result in action. However, in all of this, there seems to be a misconception about faith. It's almost like Christian faith feels like it has a halo around it. Like true faith is clean, it's shiny, you just roll up our sleeves and let's just do it. But if we're really honest, we sometimes feel that if we're doing faith right, it should be a little bit easier than it is, and not so messy or uncertain. The misconception goes something like, "If I just believed better, this would be easier. Why is exercising faith seem easier for almost everyone else but me?" With this misconception, it would be easy to get discouraged or leave the development of faith to others, like missionaries or pastors or the like. But recognizing and exercising faith, that faith can be messy, is actually encouraging. At least it is to me. And I hope to you, working through exercising faith is really down in the dirt. It's gritty. Sometimes it's hand-wringing. Sometimes it's mixed with sleepless nights or sometimes tears. Exercising faith and figuring out what to do is often difficult. An encouraging part of this messiness of exercising faith is that it isn't surprising or insulting to God. that it's sometimes difficult for us. God knows things aren't clear and is interested in us and willing to meet us right where we are and help us in exercising faith in him. He gets it when we say, Jesus, I believe, but help my unbelief. After all, he says to us in Matthew 11, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Jesus wants us to come to him in whatever condition we are, and he will teach us. He wants to learn us up when it comes to faith and trust in him. Another encouraging aspect of faith as we exercise faith can develop is that it can grow, it can deepen. You're going to get sick of me referencing my garage Superman story, but before I get to that, why is it easy for Superman to jump higher than tall buildings? Superman to jump higher than tall buildings? Because tall buildings can't jump. Yes, yes. But speaking of not jumping, and I was thinking about this story and it's relevant to faith, I got to thinking of my sister all those years ago and her unwillingness to jump. I initially chalked it up to the fact that she was younger, but I suspect it was actually more than that. You know, our house in Fairport had a straight, narrow staircase between the first and second floor. And when I was even younger, like maybe four or so, and I'd be going to bed and maybe stalling for a little extra time, I would jump to my dad from the stairs as he stood on the first floor. I would start on the first or second stair and jump to my dad and then move to the third stair, then to the fourth stair. So as I thought about it, I couldn't recall my sister doing this progressive stair jumping. But because I had done it, I had the benefit of seeing my dad's kid-catching skills on a smaller scale, and it built trust and faith in him. That helped me then take the garage leap of faith several years later. You know, our Heavenly Father works in the same way. It's likely you have situations where you have asked God for assistance because you believed he could make the situation better. And in those times when the situation was made better, it encouraged your faith. And in a way, it made you more inclined to trust him in the future. It built and developed faith in you. It encouraged you to walk or jump in faith. This progressive aspect of faith, of increasingly walking by faith, is highlighted in 2 Corinthians 5, where we are encouraged in this life to walk by faith and not by sight. But maybe some faith exercising situations don't come to mind to you. And the good news is there's no better time to start trusting him than today or even this week. Start small. Start on the first step. After all, Zechariah chapter 4 tells us to not look down or despise the day of small beginnings. And sometimes small is just right. As Jesus tells us in Matthew 7, that faith in him, as small as a mustard seed, mountains can be moved. You know, another strong contributor to the growth and development of faith is the community effect. If you recall, my dad was hoping to encourage my sister to jump by seeing me jump. Likewise, when we hear of God helping and responding to faith that is placed in him and our friends or in fellow Willowbrookers, we think, you know what, that's great. We are encouraged. We are encouraged that maybe we too can jump off the first or second stair in faith because of the capability and willingness of God to catch us, to respond to our trust. The book of Acts often highlights this community effect as Peter or Paul would visit various groups of believers or churches and tell them what God was doing in other parts of the world. Those interactions would often result in a group being encouraged, growing in numbers, and growing in faith. You know, this community effect is in part why, as Willowbrook, we meet. We get to see faith in action in others, which in turn encourages us to act or grow in faith. You know, it's great when faith is growing and we see results and we sense we are being caught. And we talked earlier about the messiness of exercising faith, how it's not all neat and tidy and golden, even though it's more precious to the Lord than gold. I'd like to say that the messiness, the uncertainty in exercising faith is the most difficult part of faith, but honestly, it isn't. As we've touched on, faith has an important aspect, and that's an outcome. Faith always has a result. Sometimes the result of exercising faith and trusting God has the outcome we hoped for or believed would happen, and sometimes it's way better than we could have expected. Of course, when this happens, it leads to excitement, happiness, maybe jumping for joy, or thanksgiving, or praising God. My last reference, I promise. and I'm really getting my money's worth out of this story. But it is true, I swear. I didn't make it up just for the sermon. Anyways, when I jumped to my dad off the garage, the catch and landing was not how I saw it going in my 8-year-old brain. You know, I envisioned a clean catch and landing, done in stride, maybe an 8 or 9 from the judges. No muss, no fuss. But that's not exactly what I got. Instead, it was a hard landing, a roll to the ground, and a few grass stains. And while in the grand scheme of things, nothing bad happened, but it was different nonetheless. Likewise, sometimes when we want our faith responded to or answered, it isn't always how it works out. Sometimes these are small and maybe we shrug it off, but other times the differences are significant from what we thought might happen. These outcomes can sometimes be disheartening or discouraging, such as maybe when that job we thought that could provide more for our family doesn't come through, the sick relative's health that we thought would improve doesn't, the reconciliation with a longtime friend doesn't happen despite our best efforts, the children that we thought God wanted for our family don't happen. You know, these and countless others bring grief, heartache, confusion, and sometimes leave us wondering what God is doing. But this is the hardest lesson in faith. This is some of the testing by fire that we mentioned earlier. This is where faith is really difficult. This is where faith gets refined. This is where we say to Jesus, help my unbelief like at no other time. You know, if anyone knew this, it was Job from the Old Testament, who lost his family and much of his possessions in a single day. And yet he told his wife in Job 2, shall we indeed accept good from God, but not accept adversity? I suspect that many of us would not need to think too long on situations where we had unexpected faith results, where we had adversity. But faith is at its most valuable, most precious to God when the outcome is unexpected and even seems contrary to how you thought God would work, yet you still trust him anyway. This is often the most difficult to understand, but it is gold. Jesus told us in John 16, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. And thankfully, he has also promised us in Hebrews that he would never leave us and he would never forsake us. You know, that is the good news in our journey of faith. In fact, it's the great news, and it's certain. Okay, so let's wrap it up. We have talked a lot about different aspects of attributes of faith and exercising faith today. Faith, interestingly enough, is considered primarily a noun. I'm sure you knew that. But we may recall that noun is a person, place, or thing in the world of grammar. And right now, my middle school English teacher would be laughing out loud or believing in miracles if she knew I was talking about English and grammar. Remember, I'm an engineer. Math and science were my thing, not English, although I love it now. But anyways, faith is considered primarily a noun, a thing like a cake, a bicycle, a thing like Joe has faith, or Sally walked in faith, where faith is a noun. And while that's fine, instead I'd like you to consider faith as more of a verb, an action, something you do versus something that you have. So instead of having faith, which is a thing, you would be faithing, which is an action. Faithing is a little weird to say, but bear with me on this. We are exercising faith all the time. Or should I say, we are faithing every day about all sorts of things. For example, you were faithing in me that I would have better jokes, or more jokes, or that you'd be done early today. You might be disappointed. I like faith as a verb, because doing so reinforces that faith is something that we do, something that we are faced with now and every day. True, genuine, golden faithing is all about believing and trusting in Jesus in the present and acting accordingly. Our faith is made complete by what we do. Faithing sometimes is messy and difficult, and at other times brings us great joy and excitement. Faithing with Jesus is a wonderful journey, whether you are walking or jumping, and we know that the working out of our faith is necessary and worth it. So I hope this week brings you a new step in faithing for you with Jesus. Amen.